Well, thank you very much, Bill, for inviting me. Now, I'll just try and get this about right. Is that all right, people? Yes? Just an amusing remark to make. I hope it's amusing. When I got up this morning and put on my clothes, I realized I was wearing a tie which has got pictures of dodos on it, which I thought was potentially relevant. And secondly, I'm wearing my Chicago Collaborative badge, which is relevant, definitely. And thirdly, I found when I went to the Silver Chair wonderful reception last night, and I was given a takeaway goodie bag, as we call them in the UK, which had in it an edible object. I didn't realize at first what it was, and I managed to drop it all over my trousers. And it left a mark, which I've been unable to get out. And the trouble is, it was a brown substance. And, you know, it may be relevant, it may not be relevant. We may be all in the... or something like that. Okay.
It was chocolate.
Was it chocolate? No, it wasn't chocolate, actually, Bill. It was,
was it?
It was a chocolate simulated chocolate. It was. It certainly wasn't chocolate. It was very chemical.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry to say. Okay, what I've done is, because I'm so bad with PowerPoint, I've produced a document which will be available with the PowerPoint on the site when the SSP put up things, so in order to help you. And secondly, because I spend a lot of my time writing up proceedings of meetings for organizations who sponsor me to come to these sort of occasions, because I'm a poor academic, I have put a certain number of references actually in the text, which I needn't have done because I put them separately. But when I did my PowerPoint, I put things into them which don't normally go into PowerPoints. This is not a spare PowerPoint. So my remit was, as Bill has mentioned, and I am particularly concerned with the different thinking that goes on in the library world from the different thinking that goes on in the publishing world, because we're all, it's an old story, as we all of us know, is that librarians see one side of the scholarly process and publishers see another side. And the academic in the middle is the same person, but they have different faces. It's the Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde syndrome, as described by Michael Mabe in an article some years ago. So I'm trying to bring some of the things I've learned from the meetings I've been organizing or attending, and I'm hoping they'll be useful. So here we are. I'm talking about that. Now, I see bits which seem to be different, but still. What I wanted to mention to start with, though, was the in my handout, there will be a number of references to meetings I've been involved in. And they are, I organized a conference last year called Valued Resources, which was in UCL. And I had the good fortune of attracting funding from IMLS. Now, who here doesn't know who IMLS is? Everybody knows? It's the Institute for Museum and Library Studies, and they are the major, a major funder of work on data curation. So I had a lot of experience and a lot of contact with the data curation people. So the first point I wanted to make is that whatever we do as information professionals, and I think of publishers as information professionals, is what should fit in with what researchers want to do, really, what they really want to do. It is no good invoking the progress of science if it was something apart from the actual research cycle. What librarians want to do, reasonably, is to educate. Librarians are hot on education, and they are a very large proportion of the various recommendations that come out of these meetings are concerned with training. I'm going to come back to that. Now, actually, when I mentioned the dodo, scholars have been really rather successful in arranging things on their own. These big data banks are organized by scholars. They're not organized by librarians. They're not organized, and publishers have really had very little to do with them until recently. Even where data sets don't have an obvious home in the library, it's not the an obvious home. The library is only recently beginning to be thought of as an obvious place to look into. And many libraries, the majority, I would say, are not really organized to ingest data of any sort. I'll come back to that one. And again, with these data banks, there is actually relatively little filtering of what goes into them. And this was brought home to me years ago when I thought, oh, how awful. The protein data banks, this is a publishing venture which publishers were excluded. And then a year later, somebody had actually put in a protein which belonged to a monkey rather than a human being and caused havoc in research process. I thought, ah, yes, they need the filtering quality assurance that we have. And the same thing goes for the preservation, archiving and preservation end. The librarians know about this. Some of these data banks, not all of them, have been rather poor at thinking about their long-term preservation future. So there's a job for us. Oh, I put in the wrong, that explains everything. I put in the wrong PowerPoint. Sorry, this is, okay, I may be able to put this in quickly. I do apologize, people. It looked different and I couldn't understand it, so. That is a very, very silly thing to do. Let's see if I've got it still. See, we sent all these things in, unfortunately, they're, let me see if I can get it again. I don't understand that, actually, sorry, just a second. I'm sorry, people. It's the second time I've done this in my life now.
Only the second?
Yeah. Now, what I'm trying to find now is get back to my, forgive me, won't take me long. Yeah. That's you. I don't want you, Linda. If not, I'll just talk, because I've got plenty of stuff to talk about. It'll come up on the site. What I'm trying to find is how I get into the... Should I better find the... Shouldn't take me a second, actually. Now, here we are. It's differently arranged from my own computer, of course, as they always are. Here we are, removable disk. That's what I want. Ah, oh, now, I may be able to find it. That's the wrong one, I think. Okay, I'll just check it again. Sorry about this, Bill.
Actually, I have the one that you sent on my jump drive as well.
You do, yes. See, it stops. That's wrong. Minimize. I probably call it something different, like SSP. Here we are. What's this? Oh, that's a Word file. Here we are. Okay. To go on. Now I'll go back. Okay. Okay, that explains why it seemed to be diverging from my text. Okay. Good. That's okay. It's okay now. No, don't worry. I'm going to stick to what it is now. I got it. Okay. Now let me just go back to where I was. I've mentioned. Okay, this is some of the meetings I've been involved in, and I just wanted to give you one bit. The latest one was the meeting which has not yet been the Digital Curation Research Summit, and I want to just read quickly something that Carol Palmer, who's writing a report on this, had said. And I thought this was particularly relevant to some of the discussions we've had. And she writes, This is a pivotal time for the Liban Information Studies community to assert its imprint on new information infrastructure and services as they emerge by leveraging its professional knowledge and principles in areas such as information organization, scholarly information use and preservation. Now, this is an example of the thinking that's going on. Now, I will move forward now, more assured. Okay, general disinformation. This isn't in my spell check, incidentally. General disintermediation. From the very beginning of the information revolution, we've all been threatened with disintermediation, and we're not going to be. Our roles may change, but publishers and librarians will continue. But scholars, as I said, are building data banks on their own. And I mentioned provision for archiving and preservation, generally no. Determination of quality and assurance of provenance, generally no. We may have something to offer. Okay, education on sharing. A lot of this is about education. Sharing is actually a big problem, as Todd will go on to talk about. And a lot of, even the most keen on sharing, are not as actually keen on sharing when it comes to their own data. I think the usual thing is, I'm looking for it at the moment on my slide, but is your data, my data is my data, your data is my data. And this is a very, very common situation for all sorts of very good reasons. But even one of the founders of the Panton Principles, which you've never heard of before, but it's an important website given, actually doesn't let his data go out until it's been with him for 6 months and he's able to exploit it. I only mentioned that in passing. Now, problems with mandates. That's another question. Mandates are big in this area. Mandates are very important. Like mandates in open access, they're seen actually as more educative rather than actual compulsory. In some areas, they can be enforced. I think crystallography is an example. But most, it's pretty difficult. Information scientists tend to see publishing roles as relatively peripheral. I've given the reference to an extremely good presentation in Chicago last December from Mackenzie Smith, who's local here and is very, very good on this topic and very active. But superseded, I've mentioned another reference to Liz Lyon, who is a figure big in this area and was the co-chair of this digital curation summit. And she actually, her view is that data will drive out publications. She shows a little, a big picture, which in the top, tiny top right-hand corner, there's the word publisher. And everything else is going on there. And this stuff is going to be more important. And publications will actually gradually disappear. It'll get rid of the crisis of journals problem. I've actually heard her say this, okay? So publishers note. Librarians see the role of data as part of the historic role of archiving and preservation. And that's fair enough. That's important, and it's a good thing. And I'm just looking to see if I have a nice quotation here. Yes. I have a quotation here from another document which has not been yet published. It's been around, but it's not really published. And this is written by Saeed Chowdhury, Mike Furlong, and Furlough, yes. Thank you very much. This is my son. He knows him well. And Joyce Ray. And it ends with the recent move of several universities to place the university press under the administrative auspices of the university libraries. The potential expansion of library services to include the front end of publication support in addition to the back end of digital curation seems even more likely. So we have a picture here of a complete sequence of support to the scholar in the research cycle, all inside a library context. Publishers naturally, as we do in this session, see data as supplemental material. I think of it as supplementary material, incidentally, and I wonder whether this is a US-UK difference. I don't know. Is it, Bill? Do you think?
I think.
Yeah, okay. But I don't mind going along with it.
Both usages are common on both sides.
Okay. but I'm quite happy to go along with this one. It's important to remember, however, another point I wanted to make here is that data has a separate existence to the bits that we are interested in relation to publication. I know this has been mentioned repeatedly, but there's a great tendency for us as publishers, and I speak here as a publisher, to forget this, because the bit we're interested in is a bit that is being used for the article. Some data can never be constrained in this way. For example, there's quite a bit of dynamic data which you can't identify, for example, the DOI. And this is important. It's constantly changing. So we have to bear it in mind all the time. Data curation is not just something which is to do with something which we deal with as publishers. But there is much more agreement, or so it seems to me, between publishers and librarians in one way than there would have been, say, 5 years ago, in that publishers are beginning to understand how libraries work and how they are, what they bring to the table in a way they haven't in the past. And over the last decade, libraries have learned something about filtering, organization, above all, sustainability from publishers. Why I say they've learned it from publishers, but I really have some justification for saying this, because people in JISC in the UK, which is a large organization funding quite a lot of work in this area, have actually told me they've got the idea that they have to do things which are sustainable, and sustainable in financial terms, from the publishing community, which is good to hear, isn't it? Something about peer review, just very quickly. It's a problem. We have to recognize it does create a bigger burden. It's been mentioned in meetings here so far, the Journal of Neuroscience case. But it's important to remember the system isn't yet broken. If you read the Berkeley stuff, which is coming out, they somehow start with the assumption that peer review is broken. There's no evidence for this. It may happen in certain parts of California, but it certainly doesn't happen worldwide. And I just want to make that point. I think it's very important not to start with the assumption something's broken. And I've mentioned that already. Oh, yes. This is the point I particularly wanted to make before I move on to some other points. What I have discovered, which is not obvious from the site, NFACE NISO site, is that Linda and David Martinson and their colleagues have done an amazing job in thinking about what supplemental data is. I know that they have considered quite carefully exactly how you can define supplemental data. Not easy, and I'm sure Linda will talk about this. And one thing that is, in my mind, something we're going to move towards, because it reflects scholarship, a particular scholarship in the biosciences, is a situation in which the article is going eventually, last, to move towards something which is like the discourse that scholars have in their own internal seminars. I think Todd would agree, but and I'm sure he'll probably say something about this, but for example, a typical way in which a seminar might work is that somebody shows a video and then talks around what you can see in the video. This is exactly the opposite from what publishers do, because the video would be supplementary data in publications they're organized at the moment. It'll be stuck at the side or additionally. What's going to happen at some point is that it's going to move centrally. Now, this has a number of conclusions, it seems to me, associated with it. One of them is that the type of material we need as publishers to be absolutely certain we're saving will be multimedia content. All the activities for the Article of the Future, Elsevier, or similar types of initiatives. Dan Pollock is here somewhere, I think, and he, yeah, there he is, and he's thought a lot about this. They're actually enhanced print type articles on the whole. And he's just nodding his head very kindly because he's a nice man. And it is, I think we're going to have to move, and this is not just publishers, it's a scholarly community as a whole who tend to be very conservative about what publishers do. We're going to have to move to something which actually reflects the way that scholars work. And this will mean a considerable difference in the way we look at supplementary data. Now, for example, David Martinson yesterday at the pre-conference, in an aside, which I don't think he wanted to be noted, but I'm noting it now for his benefit, is that the article may be a totally distributed thing. We may be just holding it a little program on a site, and that may be the article which links all over the place. This is not unlikely. It's actually likely. Now, I still got about, 5 minutes, okay? Shift a scene outside North America. I thought about this. This is a part of my remit. I know that international man Bill, as you see, and he thinks, I'll get Watkinson in to do the international stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. But actually, you know, the US is very much in the lead in this area. Rather oddly, the most important parts of the theory of digital curation, looking after the data from the point of time in which the experiment is conceived to what happens at the end in publication. Digital curation, I had no idea what it meant until very recently. This is the thinking, the theory is best expressed as a digital curation center in Edinburgh. And people in the States in this field think, oh, well, this is just the most absolutely wonderful stuff. It's where we all think, we look to it. It's a few, but in fact, it has almost no impact upon the library community in the UK. In the US, the library community is getting more and more active in doing this sort of work on digital curating. But in the UK, not at all, or hardly at all. The other thing I wanted to raise in connection with that is the question of training again. This is why I come back to training. These meetings I've been to, like the Digital Curation Summit, where I was the only sort of person with any connection in publishing present, with one exception, is this question of training is big. And training can be training of librarians to help them handle data, or training of scientists to help them handle data. The two things tend to be talked about in the same breath, but it has also, this is needed, no question of it, but how it's going to work in the future, I don't know. I've looked through the literature to see if there's anything particularly splendid coming out of Europe, including the UK. I don't know of anything particularly interesting coming from outside Europe and the US, but I may suddenly find that the Chinese have been thinking about this all along. I don't know about that. This particular document, Riding the Wave, which comes from a high-level expert group of the EU, which means people have a nice time having dinners for about 2 years. But in this case, they have come up with a really beautiful piece of work, because the chairman of it, who I know quite well, told me that he'd used the former staffer from the New York Times to write the thing. So it's actually readable and short. So this is one I recommend to you very strongly, Riding the Wave. The only way to find it, actually, if you don't have the reference, because you can't find anything on the EU sites, is to put in Riding the Waves plus EU, and you get it. And I wanted to just give you that, because it's an example of thinking ahead for the next, up to 2030. And this is the sort of thing he says. And you see, some of it moves from the clear, straightforward bit to the pie-in-the-sky bit, like we will all be at peace, it ends up almost. But the beginning bit, I think, is a very good collection of suggestions. And he, at a meeting I went to quite recently, he also gave another presentation, which he said, and I just discovered this, or rediscovered this, he gave the big issues we have to face up to now. This is a man called John Wood, a senior scientist and now working in an administrative capacity. Who preserves the nature? It is not data. It is not going to be publishers. Data terrorism is a big worry to data people. Not anybody here, I didn't think, but they seem to worry about it at the highest levels. How to encourage sharing if others will not? Someone has to make the move. Lack of true large-scale project management. I mentioned the data banks. After the funding of a project involving data is concerned, and almost all projects leave data behind, the preservation of the data is not currently being funded. Onward funding. There's a problem of using data when you do not know its provenance, ingestion. How do you know? If you don't know where it's coming from, it isn't going to be very easy to judge its worth among the academic community, because the academic community can go on where things come from. It's not straightforward as that. That's basically it. And where are the data standards we need to optimize use? I thought it was a good list. Now, I was going to look through, find some of the projects. Now, the PARS project is something the EU has done. I've given the references. There are several articles. The STM was one of the players in that project, and Efka Smit at STM, the technology director, has done several articles. She's churning them out. One's gone into DLib, one's going to Learner Publishing. They're both excellent, and they give a definite position for publishers in this picture. And I mentioned the Data Curation Center, and the Data Curation Center have a lovely little picture, which I can show to people, of the completely incomprehensible to me. I've got here somewhere, but I could wave it to you. I couldn't manage to get into my PowerPoint. Sorry about that. It would need a rather different sort of PowerPoint. And there's also DataCite. DataCite has been mentioned a little bit here so far. I don't know if Linda's going to talk about DataCite at all. Are you, Linda? No. Okay, DataCite is the linking project, which involves using DOIs. Now, the point about DataCite, which was originated in Europe and is being taken up vigorously in the States, is that it's outside the control of publishers. In the LIS area, and particularly the theoretical LIS people, library and information science people in the US, there's a huge suspicion of things which are under publisher control. I don't mention any names, but I can tell you some of the leading theorists are very worried about this. DataCite is not going through Crossref, it's going through separate entry points using DOIs. And this is very major, and it's being taken up, I believe, quite rapidly to link to different types of data. It has to be data which is not very fluid. It has to be at a point of something as a DOI to something definite, but it's happening. And that's a European project. And JISC and Dryad, as closely involved with Dryad, I noticed there's a thing called Dryad UK, which Todd will know about, but I was very surprised to find it had a separate site. There we are. Pangea is the other big project, which I'm not going to discuss, but it's another large project, which Elsevier closely involved. And there are other ones. I know that Wiley, for example, are involved in a number of projects, and publishers have a place at the table for many of them. Now, finally, where do we fit in as publishers? Are we just going to provide links and become a smaller part of the overall scholarly communications scene? I don't know whether it's proven in any way that the publications are a smaller part of the scene, but I think most people feel that gradually the other bits are becoming bigger. Or do we have an experience and the tools to bring a specific contribution to the scenario where publishers partner with librarians to facilitate data? It would be wonderful if we could. And Bill, I'm going to finish there.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Sorry about that.
And I think since we have...